Thank you all for coming. Many of you, all of you, know me. I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And we have two new people that look like they've joined us today who we haven't met before, Todd and Jillian. So maybe you could just say where you're from and a little bit about your home care, you know, agency. That'd be great. And Marissa, you'll lead the charge, lead the discussion, our fearless chair. That would be
I'll try.
Okay, nothing's better than that. So I'm sure there's a lot that's been going on since the last time we met, and we want to hear everything. So I guess maybe Jillian, you'll just say hello and where you're from and how long you've been in the position. I don't know, something like that.
So my name's Jillian. I work with Elaine, and we are at Jewish Family Services Home Support in Vancouver. Recently, I moved out of the position of home support coordinator for our downtown area into Sylvie's position, which is recruitment, retainment, and as well, I do some senior services, so a little bit of case management.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Todd Shank. I'm the CEO at Jewish Social Service Agency in the greater DC area, and we have an affiliate agency, Premier Home Care. I think Cindy Libby Green's been on some of these calls before, but I don't think she could make today, and so I wanted to fill in and be able to at least join and provide some continuity.
Thank you. Well, hi, everyone. Today, for some reason, I actually was alerted to the Facebook message reminding us of the meeting. And I don't know, maybe I put my notifications on a couple of weeks ago and didn't remember, because then I saw a message from Debbie, was it you, that was asking about client rates? And I responded, but it was back. Hi, Israela.
How are you doing?
In early August. I'm sorry for that, you know, I didn't even see it, but now hopefully I'll get notifications when there's a message, I don't know. But I do have a suggestion, maybe with the Facebook.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tag someone, like in your question, like tag me or somebody, because then for sure it would come up on the face, like give me an alert that someone mentioned me in a comment and is asking a question, because I don't know, there's just so much coming in these days. It's so easy to miss. And, I want us to be able to help each other and in whatever way is convenient for someone to be asking. And it's also discouraging, you know, when we put a question out there and like hear
cricket. Nobody answers.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry for that, but I can help you with what we're doing with client rates. We've always had a client, a couple's client rate.
What's the question? Do you want to discuss it now?
The question was whether we have a separate rate for couples. And whether we pay caregivers more for couples. My answer is yes to both. We do 1.5 times our normal rate for couples, and both the pay rate to the caregiver as well as the charge rate to the client. So that's that.
What do other people do?
Oh, we haven't been doing that at all. We've been just charging the, you know, standard rate for one person, but that's a very good point, actually.
I mean, it came up because of caregivers, you know. It's like most of what we do is driven by what caregivers are willing or not willing to do, our minimum shifts, our rates, everything, you know. Savvy caregivers aren't going to do the same job for two and get paid as if they're working for one, so the demand required us to do that.
I mean, for GG clients we would separate them. But I'm just thinking for a non-GG client. Do you know what GG is?
No.
Oh, claims conference.
Oh, like claims conference. So yeah, same. So
CC.
CC.
Yeah, so, we thought you said G as girl.
Well, I did say GG. German government. That's what we.
Oh, okay. German government. That's funny. We call it CC, claims conference. We just call it Holocaust, which is depressing.
Okay.
Anyways, separate them, but. For our other clients, we have not been. So that's a very good point, actually. So you could charge the client 1.5 times and you would pay the worker 1.5.
Absolutely. I'm surprised workers are not asking about that. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, this obviously came from a couple. So how do you determine when, if there's two people in an apartment, at what point is it a couple's rate and a single rate versus a single rate? Like we were hired to help the husband and the family, but the wife needs just as much help. And so that's when we sort of were like, well, we're not going to give them two caregivers.
Right. No.
Charging. So how do you determine?
Well, we do our assessment process. They can call and cleverly be saying it's just for him. I'm okay. Then the nurse gets in and says, no, there's no way. She can't even do this for herself or that for herself. So we try to respectfully respond after the assessment is done. Saying, you know, based on the assessment, we see that the needs are for both people. And by now we're just used to it. We just tell them flat out that the care is going to be for both, and they both become clients. So both their names are in the system, but we do the billing as couple and whatever. If they're fighting it, if they're denying it, then we can't force the issue. But then it becomes a little bit uncomfortable and complicated. We have to tell the caregiver, look, you're really only there for him mm-hmm. or for her. When it comes to light housekeeping, laundry, and meal prep, it's very, on the fence. So we say, look, you're going in the laundry anyway.
Right. If we're showering, the husband and the wife needs a sitz bath, then we're caring for two people.
That's definite. That's different. Yeah, that is totally different. But throwing in the laundry, I say, come on, you're throwing in the laundry. The laundry is doing the washing. It's of no consequence to you. Right. If you're making a sandwich, okay, it is extra to make it for two, but come on, what's the big deal? You know, you're trying to incorporate yourself into their life, into their family life. I don't want to make a big deal. But when it comes to personal care or taking them to appointments. You can't tell, if you're gonna take the wife to the appointment and a husband to an appointment, she's a client, so for sure that.
Right.
So, we just try to draw the line on what's logical and fair.
Marissa, there's a question here. Did you answer it? I don't know. Marissa, the couple's rate is applied to the CC clients as well?
Oh, I was gonna tell you. So, and where do you see, the chat, I see it now.
And also Tammy, who is, her office is there. She's not, she's here, but she can't see you, but she can hear.
Okay. So for a year, I find it very interesting. The claims conference itself has rules, but then they get implemented by the senior services department or whoever the grant is being administered and managed by, right? So for a long time, I would hear different rules. And it turned out it was really, I'm sorry to say, just our senior services department hiding behind claims conference, making up rules. They were making up their own rules of how they wanted to do things because it was in the best interest of their budget. And as the excuse, they would just say claims conference doesn't allow that or claims conference requires that. When I got into my new role, I started to see the big picture and realize it's not the claims conference rules, although they do have 1,000,001 rules. But it's how they're choosing to spend the money. And we had to push back. And this is JFS to JFS, right? So I'm JFS at home and I did have to push back.
The exact same thing.
Yeah. So I had to push back to JFS Senior Services and say, no, maybe in the past you keep saying there's no couples rate, but this has to be worked out. And we eventually were able to work it out. They were saying things that were sort of like, oh, the claims conference doesn't recognize that one caregiver can be providing care to two people at one time. I don't remember how we finally resolved it because that's bogus. And somehow we worked it out. I don't remember the details, but if somebody is having that challenge and you need me to go back and find out the details and remind myself to share with you how we worked it out, then I'll let you know.
Well,
but
we
to have a couple. What?
Marissa, we enter the clients separately. Like
we do too. Yeah. Everyone does. Yeah. Right. Right. But what the senior services management was saying is claims conference auditor is going to come in and they're going to see these two people that live in the same home and they get services simultaneously. How are they getting simultaneous services? Like
they never
because they are, because you know, it's constant supervision. It's constant care. Just because one person's asking for water doesn't mean the other person's not also getting showered. And the person is there for both. And you split the rate. So it's actually more cost effective because you're getting, instead of, because the alternative is pushing back on, let's say, pushing back on the department saying, okay, so they both need care. Then you're going to have two caregivers. Two caregivers is more costly than 1.5 times with one caregiver.
True.
But that's why she's the chair.
You're literally getting away. What?
I said, that's why you're the chair. You're a master. Oh. Genius. I'm kidding. Yeah.
I'm very, I get in trouble. I'm not in trouble. You know, when I just try, I'm a little pushy and, you know, people don't like it. But when I see what's right, I push for it.
Right.
And everyone doesn't like to have to hear it. But you know what? What's right is right.
Right. Agreed. So Deb, you got your answers.
But I can continue, we can continue the conversation. Anybody that wants to talk about this or get help.
I have another question about services offered, because this is something I discussed with our aging services director yesterday. Does anybody offer any other sort of, especially now in COVID, other ancillary services like an art, I think we talked about this even last time, like an art therapist that can come to the home, a music therapist, a nutritionist. Does anybody offer those as a, we're looking at it as a differentiator in our community to differentiate us from other home cares in the competition, but I just wondered if anybody is doing that, if anybody knows of a model that we could sort of take a look at, because that's something we're looking at right now.
We have something called the Brain Fitness Program, where it was, we had a therapist who would go in as a group at the JCC, and when they weren't doing it at the JCC, they were now doing it via Zoom. So it's all these little exercises as a small group that we have somebody doing the Brain Fitness Program. We also were awarded a grant where we have the Anachnu Program, and we do a lot of Zoom. I wouldn't say arts and crafts, but there's a lot of art. There's a lot of singing. They're watching performances that we were able to get them iPads, and if they had laptops, to be able to watch activities, you know, to be together. But that's all that we do here.
But is that for seniors or our clients of your home support program?
Oh, that's... They're not for my seniors. They're unless they want to join, it's separate. It could be for anybody who, and it doesn't have to be for my seniors in the home care program. But it could be if they wanted to.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have a Uniper grant here in Cincinnati, so we have the option of doing Zoom programming and online and tablets to technology. We were just looking as something to. Like a one-on-one, somebody who with dementia who loves to cook and can't do it by themselves, if you brought a dietitian or nutritionist in and what you would charge an hour to, you know, cook with that person because they're not getting out and going to the J in the programming and they don't have the patience for Zoom. So we're kind of looking to, you know, really broaden what our care plan, what our care looks like. Especially you have college students, people at artists out of work, you know, is it a good use of what's available in the community at this time?
So are you looking, Debbie, are you looking beyond the pandemic or during the pandemic?
You know, it's something that this has come up before the pandemic. You know, like I said, somebody with dementia who maybe isn't getting out of the house or, you know, I went once and made hummintoshen with a client because her daughter said that was the favorite thing to do. And I make really good hummintoshen. So I went with her and we went one day and I made the dough and I came back the next day and we baked them. And then I came back the next day and we made packages for her grandchildren. So like, and I did that out of the goodness of my heart, but I could see a place where there's.
So Debbie, I wrote you privately. But when I worked in Greenwich, there was a home care agency at Israeli, I'm sure you know them, Sterling Care. And Stephen Katz, that's his model. If you want to just look it up, that's what he tried to do to differentiate himself from the like 12 other home care agencies that were in Greenwich, Connecticut. And he has a lot of that art therapy and spirituality and, you know, all kinds.
Is it free or do they charge for it?
Yes, you charge for it.
And Debbie, were you talking about charging for it?
Yeah, we're talking about charging. I mean, a chaplain I wouldn't necessarily charge for that. We have on staff and we can probably use. But yeah, somebody, you know, it came up because my daughter was potentially not going back to college this semester. So I was like, she's a great artist and she always worked with the jewelry specialist at the nursing home when she was in high school. So I was like, I could pay her $13.50 an hour to go and do art with somebody a couple times a week. And, you know, so, cause she's
I think it's a good idea.
I love the idea. I love the idea.
Sorry.
I think the challenge with everything is that the perception that our services are free, especially since we're the home health agency and the social services agency is JFS. Ours is Ruth and Norman JFS, Rails JFS in Boca, and they have a robust volunteer program. So it kind of seems like it would be the type of thing that you would expect the volunteer department to think of. If there's this need, let's fulfill it with volunteers. And the community expecting something like that to be volunteer. However, it's all how you frame it. So if it's like a professional type of service that they perceive, like art therapy or something like that, then I don't see why not. I guess they just have to, for us, I know in our state, anybody who goes into a client's home has to have that level 2 background screening, be listed under the ACA clearinghouse.
Yep.
If all that is, you know, taken care of, you can really send anybody as long as they're not performing a hands-on medical treatment that they're not licensed to do.
Would you do this during the pandemic? Because you just think of more and more exposure to, you know, to the clients.
That's all up to everyone. That's all up to everyone's individual. Yeah. And like every, you know, if someone needs wound care, they're having a Medicare nurse. If someone needs PT, they're having a physical therapist. It's all personal. That we have some clients who don't want, who stopped services, you know, period. And they're managing. We have other clients who kept their companion, others who didn't. It's so personal, you know.
Right, but I think what Debbie is talking about makes a lot of sense for now, right? Especially for now. And
especially for now, because you can't get out places to get those needs met.
You know, Todd, what do you guys do? You have a huge, you know, program over there.
I mean, we deliver a skilled service of med tech visits. So we help with medication administration. That's really the only additional skilled service that we do as part of our home care. But we're using somebody to help us to kind of look at how we can bundle services differently, both across the home care entity and our JFS equivalent, JESA. So, you know, what amount of care management is part of your rate so that somebody's going to come in and do that. You know, where can we help with other social determinants of health that are going to be useful in terms of your overall health and functioning? So, you know, we have an escorted transportation service. We have Meals on Wheels program. We have programs to address social isolation. And so that's kind of the next wave for us is, how do we think about bundling? Now that said, I think we've identified that there's a little bit of a tension in kind of two ends of the market that we're both looking to serve. So when you bundle, your rate ends up being a much higher rate because you're building more into it. But you're really trying to differentiate yourself on quality and being comprehensive, one-stop kind of shopping for people. But who it tends to attract are the folks who are a little more affluent,
right?
Not as price sensitive. And at the same time, at the other end of the market, we're serving people where there's price sensitivity, where we do some charity care as part of our home care delivery so that we can serve some folks who otherwise wouldn't be able to access these service. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge to figure out how do you serve both ends of that without your message is really becoming confusing and your service to a broader range not appearing to be lower quality because you're competing on price and at the other end, that you don't end up pricing yourselves out of being able to serve people who really need the service and would struggle to get good quality service otherwise.
So that's a fine line and a dilemma, right? So absolutely. True.
You mentioned possibly bundling geriatric case management with your hourly rate for home care. And so what would that look like if you have a rough estimate?
Yeah, I mean, we're still working on that, but it would include a certain amount of hours or a regular kind of reassessment and help as part okay. of the rate. So, you know, when you first come to us, it would be having a couple hours of geriatric care management come in, identify if there are other services to be set up, and then have some cadence to either a quarterly visit with that case manager or semi-annual visit with that case manager, unless the nurse flagged that it really needs to happen sooner because there's been a change in functioning. So, we'd figure out a certain number of visits or hours to bundle into the rate.
That's really interesting because we're considering our JFS has a geriatric fee-for-service case management program called the CareLink program. Yeah. Yeah. And we are considering doing a DBA, like a doing business as, or, but moving the management of it over to us to run it more like a business instead of like a social services program. And because it should be run like a business. And, we're trying to think of different, and we have much more contact constantly with people to offer this service to, because everyone who's inquiring for home care is a point of contact to offer this to. And the caregivers who are already in the home reporting issues to us are total sources of referral. The reasons go on and on, but figuring out that way to bundle it and make it appealing, because we think almost all of our clients could benefit from this in some way, shape, or form. But the fee-for-service hourly rate is from JFS is $125 an hour. So how do you even begin to bundle that in to an hourly rate, especially when clients are apt to say, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it, even sure. though you want them to plan
yeah, it. Yeah, I mean, I think there'd be a certain threshold of hours that somebody gets where you really would look at that being a part of the bundled rate. I mean, to this point, everything's been a la carte. A different right. rate for MedTech. We charge separately for the nursing assessments. Many agencies bundle the nursing visits into their hourly rate so that you're not kind of getting nickel and dimed with every individual service, because, you know, we run into an issue where then clients say, oh, no, I don't need the
nursing. I don't want that.
Now. It's okay. I don't need to pay for that now. Well, it's a part of our requirement. We need to do that. We don't want to be negotiating nursing exactly. visits with you. So some of that would be easier for us to bundle in. And then, you know, understand you're going to have, you know, there's going to be a certain cadence to those visits, and we just add that into the cost of our rate.
You're right about the different groups of clients that we're serving and the different how it affects different people differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we're thinking along the same lines as you.
And so is Debbie, she said.
Yeah, Debbie. And I love the idea of introducing like those art therapies and things. It's just you have to be so careful what you're offering and that it doesn't have anything to do with medical, and that doesn't have anything to do with something that can be perceived as a therapy.
Right.
And the person is not a licensed therapist.
Right.
So you would say, just art lessons potentially.
Yeah, if you're
using volunteers.
Right. Someone has music lessons. Speech therapist, and I was like, no, that's a reimbursed service under Medicare. We're not gonna go in that kind of way. But yeah, you can do it, cooking lessons, art lessons, whatever.
That's so cute. I love that.
Right. Whatever. It's a nice idea. And if you're using volunteers, you don't really have to charge that much, and they can get a series potentially. Six is cheaper than, you know, one at a time.
Right.
Whatever you do.
And, you know, to Elaine's question, you know, sure, 3 months ago, no, we wouldn't have necessarily said this is a pandemic solution, because nobody wants people in their houses, and it's too, and you know what, we're 6 months in,
six months.
We have to create a new normal. Like,
there's no end in sight. We don't know when life is going to ever return to
the looking at winter. I spoke with our JCC Senior Center Director today, and she's like, I don't see us having programs till Passover, probably. I mean, there's just no way you can safely bring seniors together, especially in a building like ours, where the JCC has daycare and preschool in the same building as seniors. There's just no safe way to do it until there's a vaccine. So, you know, we have to get creative, and we're seeing the isolation. We did snack bags for everybody because we saw the folks in our who are in senior living facilities weren't getting enough nutrition because they weren't going to the dining room and their food wasn't prepared the way they wanted. So we sent bags with, you know, protein shakes and, you know, all that kind of thing, because it's just, it's not getting any better. It's not going away. So.
Right. I think you're so right, Debbie. When we first started this, right, in the very beginning, I remember I said to Marissa, I think we should talk about COVID-19. And Marissa's like, no, we don't have to talk about it. It's not happening. It's not even in Florida.
No, I was saying everyone's tired of hearing about it, but.
And then, you know, throughout the past 6 months, we've been meeting, and it's now it is the new normal. In the middle of it, it was so scary. Couldn't get PPE. Everyone was, you know, concerned about their clients. And now you really got to think about what can you do moving forward. And so I think that's very natural, clearly. But
does anyone want to talk about the effect?
Tatiana wanted to say something about
it. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
And then we'll move to the next thing.
Thank you. On the topic of how we can distinguish ourselves, differentiate ourselves from our competitors. So we do mention when we advertise our home care services that we specialize on trauma. Just because till recently, most of our clients were Holocaust survivors, so definitely all our caregivers very much specialized in working with trauma survivors. And we also provide trainings on cultural sensitivity and trauma, etc. So we want to use the take advantage of the skills that our caregivers gained over the years. So we have pretty stable staff, people who work for us for years. This is where we hope to take a certain niche to outreach for the clients from other communities that have gone through some traumatic experiences. So that's one thing. Another thing we try to introduce as much as possible medical technology into providing care. And again, it's thanks to the Claims Conference grant that allows us to buy certain medical equipment or safety/security equipment for the Holocaust survivors that our caregivers and the case managers, we become a little bit more familiar with all this medical technology. So this is, and again, it's something that is a trend that will be developing more and more in home care services for seniors, so people with disabilities. So it's meds administration in those certain boxes that remind you when you have to take a pill, or it's alert system for people with cognitive issues, or even a medical robot. At some point, I was doing research on medical robot as a companionship option.
Medical rover?
Robot.
Has anyone heard of that?
Yes.
Controversial. But I mean, it's still something that is on the market and can be explored. We are pretty familiar right now with monitoring sugar level for people with diabetes with those kids. I don't remember how they call it. Sort of the stickers that you stick on the arm, and caregivers are trained how to read the sugar level and how to upload it and transfer it to doctors' database. So all those little things, and it's slowly kind of adding up. So our caregivers and again the case managers get a lot of knowledge on medical technology. So this is where we also want to put us aside from other home care agencies and definitely the case management. We have an outreach senior outreach worker, my colleague. She's a full-time worker with our GFS, so she's doing case management for all private clients. So we do indicate that with home care services, case management comes automatically. So whatever they need in addition to completing the form, downsizing, relocating, family issues, etc. So she's the one who is doing that kind of case management. And again, we do state that it's something that is different from other agencies. Right. Yeah, so those kind of three main categories. Alzheimer's dementia, I think everybody is kind of stating as something that they provide care for. So we don't even mention many times, although again, it's a very common trend that
That sounds great, Tatiana.
Thank you. Yeah, we small agency right now. We're doing now a feasibility study to see if we can expand our private clientele. So exploring different marketing options. So we'll see.
Keep us posted.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, you're not allowed to state that you're specializing in Alzheimer's and dementia unless you have a specific program, like really with a whole developed program with training and policies and procedures and things. So
you have to be very
careful. You can't even have it on your flyer or anything.
I see. Yeah, exactly. We try to be also very cautious with the wording when we advertise something. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, what were you going to say, Marissa, before you were going to say?
I was just, when I thought about, you know, talking about what's going on lately today, I realized every time we meet, our agency has been impacted more and more by COVID. Like at first we're doing okay. Wow, it's amazing. Everything's okay. But, you know, it's hit home now. I mean, definitely we've had positive tested caregivers and clients, and mostly at facilities, because we wouldn't even know if it wasn't at facilities, because clients are not really getting tested themselves unless they're in a facility and they're kind of encouraging or requiring them to. But what I find fascinating is the rapid pace at which the information changes because of the research that's developing, and CDC's guidelines changing frequently, and the way that facilities have to manage themselves for risk and liability and practicality versus the constant changing CDC guidelines that now are saying basically go symptom based.
What do you mean go symptom?
So the CDC recently updated their recommendations for testing. For about a month, there was a testing frenzy. And at least in Florida, there was such an overload on testing because a new rule was passed. And this is in a lot of states. That, first of all, there was a rule passed that at facilities, caregivers had to be tested every 2 weeks. So that was the first thing. That was the first wave of a requirement that went state by state and had a huge impact on testing numbers. Then there was an update, then I guess the local ACA's versions, you know, the local agencies that enforce these rules were implementing that requirement, and the state, like the governor in our state, was the one who passed that rule. But,
right. I remember Jessa, Cindy was telling us last time about what you guys were doing in your, program, and you had to be tested every day, every week.
It gets to be insane, right? So there was this overload of testing, and then the bigger problem was testing results. So clearly, so people were getting tested, results were delayed, it's invalid. What's the point? You're getting tested, you're finding out. We had caregivers that got tested, they got their results 2 weeks later, found that they were positive. Their quarantine was over. They already spent it in the public.
Yeah, terrible.
Okay, anyway, so just to cut it short, right now, if you go on the CDC website, and I can share the link to this page, the recommendation is for testing only for those who are symptomatic. And even if you have been positive, it is not being recommended, like what most of us have been following, or many of us, two negative tests. Like for about a month, we all followed this policy. If you're positive, you can't come back to work till you have two negative tests. And a basically recommended 14-day self-isolation. Now that's totally changed. Now it's completely symptom-based. Like even if I tested positive today, the recommendation for self-isolation is 10 days now, cut back from 14, and recommends to be symptom-based. So if you were always asymptomatic, there is no recommendation to go get tested. No, who's going to follow that for, sorry, Todd, what did you want to say?
I'm just mumbling to myself. I mean, how can you right. not test people? We know right. that there are people who transmit this who are asymptomatic.
So I'll tell you what it says on the CDC website. It blew my mind.
If we're putting people in contact with vulnerable
right.
folks out there, we have a responsibility
right.
to
exactly.
try to protect the client and try to protect our staff.
Right, right. But it's the perception of covering ourselves and liability and being responsible versus science. So the science is saying that this crazy thing that I never heard of, and I'm not a nurse, you can be positive and shedding the virus and non-contagious. And it's right there on the CDC website. You can be positive, shedding the virus, and not contagious. And so the CDC right there in black and white print stated.
Isn't that the definition of contagious, that you're shedding the virus?
That's what I thought. And since I'm not a scientist and I'm not a doctor, I had to go and research this. But you can actually go online and see it on the CDC website with your own eyes. And then you could shake your head like I am, totally confused, because I think it has to do with the levels, something so specific. And it gets crazy. So we're not following that. Of course, we're requiring testing, because the worst thing, that it would be the worst thing if people started having the virus and being sick, and we said, well, the CDC said, so we're not following it. But the guidelines are there. It specifically says, due to the fact that healthcare service providers are not being able to return to work quickly enough because of this overabundance of caution. So they changed their guidelines. And now for people who are really following and reading the CDC website and trying to understand the science, it can be very confusing. So to each his own, but I'm just letting you know.
This isn't just being put out by your governor, Death Santis?
No.
Look at what happened in Ohio. Our governor went to meet Trump, was coming to the airport, and they did a rapid test at the airport, and he tested positive. I mean, he's been like really very good on a lot of things, DeWine, and then tested positive, couldn't go meet the president, then went back home, had two negative tests. It was a false positive.
Yeah. Like, and I cases like that with clients.
I know about the shedding only because my sister-in-law's mother, 96 years old, she had COVID. She was in a nursing home. They released her home to go to hospice, and they did another COVID test as part of the hospice admission. And even though she'd had COVID 8 weeks earlier, she had a positive test because she was shedding.
And exactly.
You can't transmit it. How they know this at this point.
Isn't that wild? See, Debbie just said what I said. Shedding and positive and not contagious.
Right. So that happened.
I don't understand that. But it has to do with the levels. It's like herpes. It's like if you have oral herpes, if you get cold sores, you always have it present in your blood. But it's at different levels. And if you're about to get a cold sore, you're contagious. And if you have an open sore, you're contagious. But if you got the blood test, the levels, you would see it in the levels of the virus. It would be much higher when you're symptomatic and when you're contagious than when you're not, but you always have it. And they don't know enough about this virus yet.
So it's so confusing. I mean,
very, very, very confusing, especially for somebody that, like for me, I have to do actual mental work and calm my anxiety because I want to do everything right.
Right, you're in charge.
But when the information's changing every 5 minutes, and then you have to go and, like, for example, Todd is a perfect example. What you're saying sounds logical to me, but what the CDC and the scientists are saying is something else. Now I'm in a position where I have to explain this to, like, a CEO that is maybe confused too. I don't want to have to defend the CDC. We just end up adopting policies that seem logical and safe, even though it may not be in line with the actual science. And it costs us, because then caregivers are out longer, clients are in quarantine longer, the whole process is drawn out, possibly unnecessarily, because this might just be the kind of thing I'm saying, that they have studies showing that people were positive, recuperated, had no contact with anyone else, and were positive again. So it might be something where you have to do blood tests rather than swabs and determine whether the virus may or may not always be kind of present in the body once you've had it, which is even...
Right. So Elaine wants to say something.
Yeah. Yes. It's all this is a little mind-boggling, but I have a question for you. When your clients developed COVID, did you continue to serve them?
No.
So Todd did.
Todd has a much more robust medical program.
Right. So hold on. So when your clients got COVID, Marissa, where did they go? Did they go to the hospital?
So interestingly, like I said, our private clients, they're not testing themselves. They like are just not. And the ones that have tested positive live in facilities.
Oh, so that's different.
Couple were in independent living and a couple were in assisted living and whatever, but we just, we didn't. And one was the same story, totally false positive.
Right.
Unbelievable what the tumult it caused. And then it was a total false positive.
Okay, so Todd, you
know, if your clients are not in a facility, because that makes it quite a bit easier, if they're at home and they're getting 24-hour care and they test positive, then what?
We say that we're not going to take care of positive clients, but I know it's not realistic in the long run. That's my short answer. I'm going to have to cross that bridge the day it happens.
Well, I'm trying to anticipate this surge that's going to happen.
Right.
In the fall.
In Florida, well, you're in Canada. In Florida, which is just one state in the United States, we have to have an actual specific guidelined program if we're going to take care of COVID positive clients. And it has to contain, you know, certain elements. Obviously, full PPE gear, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So my best advice to you is just if you intend on staying in those homes, that's okay, because doctors and nurses are taking care of positive clients every day of their lives, and they're not coming home necessarily sick if they use the right precautions. And my stance has always been to act like your clients, your friends, whoever you're in contact with is positive. That's the best way, because you can protect yourself properly with the correct usage of PPE. So
I know here in Cincinnati, some of our competitors are upcharging for COVID. Yeah. So if they take COVID positive case, they're charging like $40 an hour or something. You know,
somebody mentioned that the other day about, about increasing fees or having supplemental fees for PPE. One person I spoke to liked the idea of it being a supplemental fee. Another person liked the idea of just raising your rate for the year to include it.
We ended up raising our rate starting in September because it made more sense in the long term financially than a fee. Because if you charge a 3-hour client the same as a 12-hour client for PPE where you're going through a lot.
Right, that's not fair either, right?
It's just easier to
it's
change.
It's so sad though, right? Somebody calls and says, my mom's positive, and you're like, express concern, and then the next comment is, and by the way, we have to charge you more.
$40 an hour, right?
Awful. And they have no option. Where are they going? They're not sick enough to go to the hospital, thank God. But they have...
Giving your caregivers more money if the person is COVID? If you're charging more for the...
Well, that's an idea. That's an idea, like a kind of, a premium for doing...
The caregivers can decline working.
They can. Absolutely.
We haven't found any caregivers that are willing to go if the client is positive. So it's all a concept. You know, we can say whatever we want. Where are the caregivers who want to do it?
So hold on, Todd. You said you are doing that, and do you
I was just wondering.
Yeah, Todd. Yeah.
Yeah. So we look. I mean, yes, it's a little different. We run a hospice program also. In addition to home care, we have a chief medical officer on staff, and so she really coordinates a lot of this. We've set up our own testing facility, so we test staff on a weekly basis. That's all at our cost. But our approach has been, and so we've served about 115 COVID positive patients to this to this point.
Amazing.
Most of those in our hospice program, but some of those our home care also serves some of the hospice patients. We have not had a single transmission to our staff.
As wow. That's like we have to give you a round of applause.
Now we put everybody.
Should be written up somewhere.
We put everybody in full PPE.
Right.
For
Cindy
every
said, Cindy told us that. Yeah, last
every
time.
Contact that they
head
had
to toe, offer, everything.
Our assumption is that everybody we're working with is COVID positive.
Exactly.
And that all of our caregivers then need to be trained in how to put on and take off PPE. We've done training around that. And for caregivers in the home, they change their PPE at minimum every 4 hours. So if they have
that's
a
fantastic
long shift,
you're like a model.
They're supposed to change it every 4 hours or when they've had any other outside contact. You go down the hall to take garbage out, you come back, you change your PPE. And so they get a package of PPE each week that they have for all of their clients for the week. When there was a stay at home order, all of our caregivers, we gave an extra $5 an hour. And if you were serving a COVID positive patient, it was an extra $10 an hour. And if it was a COVID positive patient, we did add that PPE additional cost to their hourly rate. And they're changing PPE often enough that if it was a long shift, it was appropriate for them to be paying that extra amount in their hourly rate. And for shorter shifts, that it covered the time that PPE was required for their visit. So that's how we've been handling most of it. There's no one right way or wrong way. And
your way sounds like the right way.
Yeah, we certainly have caregivers who don't want to go out and serve patients, and they don't have to. Although right. I have to say, a lot of that was fear at the beginning. And once they, you know, saw that they were getting PPE, that we were offering testing, that there were not rampant examples of transmission, I think more got comfortable with continuing to provide service.
Yeah,
that is so impressive.
That is very.
And I just have to ask, how is the company affording all of this, and what's going to be with the bottom line, and where are you going to get the funding to support this ongoing?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's not ongoing. Hopefully it's somewhat time limited, but it is, you know, we're a July through June fiscal year. So we pretty much counted on the fact that we need full PPE for the entire fiscal year and that we'll have another couple of months of hero pay during this year. A lot of that is covered by the SBA loans that we got that helped to cover additional cost. As an agency, we also got some federal relief tied to Medicare. And so that's helped us to be able to underwrite some of the purchase of PPE. Some of it, look, our approach is this is the right thing to do. This is based on our values. This is based on taking care of our staff and the people that we're helping. And we'll figure out the rest of it. And so some of that has been donors, NJHSA has helped us with that and raised money. So I think it's a combination of lots of different ways of trying to underwrite. I mean, it's extraordinary additional costs. You know, we're paying a private lab probably $6,000 to $10,000 a week for our testing. And then we got approved to be a county testing site so we could use their lab for free. And then their lab just went defunct a week ago. So we're back to paying privately. So it's a little bit of a mishmash of different options, and we're learning as we go.
I love everything you're saying. It's great.
You know, we haven't heard from Linda, and you're normally much more talkative. What's going on down there in Southern New Jersey? Can you hear me? Well, maybe because she's frozen. Linda, can you hear me? You're muted.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. My apologies for coming on late. I was, my head was in something else. Basically, we're starting back slowly. We have not had any positive cases in home, just in AL or IL. We're not charging any more. We haven't paid anybody really anything more. Housekeeping and home care is starting up, you know, slowly. People are uncomfortable, and I'm trying to work with that, you know, on the aides and on the clients. And I was making notes as you were listening. Our support groups are all online, and we are totally amazed at how our clients have stepped up. I mean, I have clients that are 100 years old that are on Zoom.
That's amazing.
I'm worried about you starting Zoom myself. Yeah, they're amazing. They're just amazing. That's about it. We're just doing the best we can under the circumstances. PPE was horrifying to try and get for a while. It's much easier now, which makes my life easier because we're also supplying, our meal programs, our volunteers, our FAP program, our Kosher Meals on Wheels program. We partnered with Camden County to provide to homebound folks who need kosher food. They are helping us pay for kosher meals for those who are still homebound. So it's slowly but surely, and I appreciate all the information. It's some really good things happening out there. And I will now ask our nurse to go back onto the CDC website because that was a lot of new information too. Uh-huh. But that's it. Good to see everybody. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, good to see you. Yeah, Jillian.
Yeah, I just had a question. Is anybody aware of programs that are or routines that have been set up for the care aides for our home support workers? I'm looking for ways that we can support them a little bit more. We are no longer able to meet them in person. We're no longer able to do introductions properly with clients. We, here in Canada, it's very difficult for us. Actually, we aren't able ourselves to actually meet the clients and see their environments. So it's quite a different story. I'm just wondering, with regards to the care aides, are you guys aware of any good things that are being done to support them? To help them, keep working and feel confident about working at this time.
Well, we're just trying to work with them, as I said, within their confines and their fears, and make sure that they have all the PPE and the training. I mean, we retrained everybody in PPE. Made sure they had everything to start back. That gave them a measure of comfort. And we've been talking to even those who were still at home, on a regular basis, keeping the communication up. We haven't done anything special, but I'd say our communication has been very, very good. And just the conversations weekly or biweekly with me or our nurse or some of them have continued to call their clients at home, and that has helped them as well as the clients as well, Mm-hmm. That's about it.
Okay.
We started doing online Zoom staff meetings once a month with our caregivers. And that has really helped. And some of them are very planned out with training videos and, guidelines. And some are more loose about, how's your mental health? How's your physical health? Does anybody need food? Is anybody's husband unemployed and they're struggling? Just sort of a chance for them to know that we care and their colleagues care. And
check-ins.
Yeah, just check-ins and also some snack bags, like we've delivered them gifts of, Gatorade and muffins and things like that. So anything you can do that shows you care about them in any way, shape, or form, whether it's money, fun, one point we gave everybody a $10 gift card to Kroger just because we knew people are struggling and they may not want to talk about it, but every little bit helps. So.
I think all those ideas are really, really great. We thought about having some kind of a Zoom drop-in as need presents. But I think your ideas are really good. We should try to implement some of them, Jill.
Yeah, we did give Amazon gift certificates a while back. Thank you for reminding me of that.
It might also be an easy way of seeking private sponsorship for the caregivers when you talk about gift cards, for example, or some small token financial way of supporting all the caregivers.
Yes.
Yeah, we got permission from our food pantry staff to be able to give distributions to our caregiving staff if they needed them.
Yes,
so
we need that too.
A resource like that also, using your internal resources and your JFS is always...
Yes. Yeah, we did that as well when people couldn't work because they were waiting for a test result. We offered them prepared meal delivery and food bank. And
great.
Thank you.
Tatiana, I think there's a question about liability, right? We didn't get to.
Right, do you have a risk?
Yeah.
So I mentioned last time, I purchased from Littler Law Firm a whole package of a COVID package. And I can send you the...
Not necessarily COVID, just in general, you know, for COVID, we sort of came up with a waiver for the clients to sign to continue the home support services.
Okay.
But just in general, when we have a client who we believe have... the client is in high risk for falls or wandering away or flooding or whatever, it could be anything, but chooses to stay home, or the family who is responsible chooses to leave him or her home. But we kind of feel uncomfortable serving the client without any proper documentation being in place. So maybe other agencies do have some risk mitigation policy. I did come across provincial home care services. They have a very elaborated risk mitigation policy that I do have a copy. It's a provincial governmental organization. But I'm just wondering if Jewish organizations already have also have their own risk mitigation policies in some sort of document that they want to share, maybe.
Does anyone know, I can answer, or does anybody else want to answer?
Does anyone have it? Yes, no?
Does anyone have it?
Yes, we do.
So if you want to share it, send it to the resource library and then look at it, Tatiana. That would be terrific for us, for her.
I do want to say one thing about it though. So we've learned the hard way, Tatiana. We've had lawsuits. So I'll just tell you a couple of tidbits before we close. Sometimes you have to make a hard decision and go with your gut and realize that there's a really high risk here and listen to what your gut is telling you when you have that difficult child on the line and you can just tell this is not going to go well because you don't agree with the way that they're handling the care. And sometimes you have to decide not to take the case because you're really opening yourself up to a real risk and trouble. So that's number one. Number two, no matter how robust your risk and mitigation policy is, if someone decides to sue, you are going to be faced with the cost of defending the case. So it doesn't, you could have any policy you want. Somebody can bring a claim against you and you have to defend it. That is costly. And most of the time you settle and it costs you even if you were in the right. So my recommendation is go buy the cooperation and, you know, behavior of the family who's helping with the case. And if you don't feel like you are working together as a team and you're not in agreement, walk away.
Solid advice.
Not in a mean way. You tell them, we want to provide services. This is what we need you to do in order to do that. Or, sorry, we have a nurse's assessment or a case manager's assessment. And from our point of view, this is an unsafe situation, so we can't participate in it.
Thank you.
You ever needed to call Protective Services then, if that's the case? Because that's the knee-jerk reaction I'm hearing.
Yeah, a couple times. Sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely,
a couple of times we did. Did they do anything? Not really. Once or twice. I mean, the situation has to be so dire for true intervention to take place. If they go and do an interview and the person seems the least bit lucid and capable in the moment of making a decision, nothing's happening. If there's a family member involved who says they're helping and taking control of it, nothing happens. They'd have to find somebody truly alone and completely cognitively impaired, then they'll intervene.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah. Marissa,
Yeah, no, it's a, that's a topic for another day.
That is a topic for another day.
At-risk seniors living alone, that's a topic. Okay.
I'll write it down. Yeah. So when is our next group? Do you remember?
You wrote 11/19?
Yeah, I didn't want everyone to know I wrote it. Yeah, so it's 11/19. We'll look forward to seeing you there. And if there's any questions that you have, like Marissa began in the beginning, you know, tag, you know, you can write to everyone because I send everyone the invitation via email, or you can do the Facebook post. But if you write to people via email, to all of us, put us in the BCC, right? Just put Marissa and myself in the CC, and then everyone will write you back with the answer instead of us all getting all of that information. Unless you're interested, we can forward it to you. So that would be my suggestion. And think about potentially if you want to present any of your ideas, programs at the virtual conference, which will be coming up in the late spring. That will be a lot of fun because everyone—
I think Todd better, somebody from your agency should definitely propose the model for home care and during COVID.
Oh yeah, that would be great. But it'll be, you know, something that's affordable, right? We're not going anywhere. We're just doing Zoom. So, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're coming up with all sorts of creative ways to bring people together. So we're already thinking about it. It's like 9 months away, but you think about it too. Okay, everyone. And enjoy the rest of your summer and, you know, happy holidays. It's crazy that we're already here at the new year. So
thank
good
you.
Seeing everyone.
Hope thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Stay safe. Bye.